What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it's another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. I got my boy Sean Pastuchon. This is we're recording this the same day I dropped a little reaction video to your announcement last week. That was a pretty big deal that you're opening up a brick and mortar location in Long Beach, tropical Long Beach, not the Long Beach that Snoop Dogg's from. For everyone who's getting excited, that's in California. This is Long Beach, New York.
That's right.
A prime area of the country, an amazing spot. Sean built it himself by hand, the entire fucking city. But all right, dude. So here's how we're going to do this. I look at this and I love people taking kind of a risk and trying something else. I just had a Stephen Hitt on the podcast. He's the one kind of doing the in-place model, but like balls to the wall. He's like, it's like the in-place model on steroids. And, you know, again, he's creating his own proof of concept with that. And now you're doing this with Active Life. You said, and you opened up your podcast with, guys, this is not my fucking idea. Well, this is not something I necessarily wanted to do, but me and the staff talked about it. We thought this is definitely going to be something that's going to make the rest of our future brick and mortar locations very successful, having a laboratory. Mm-hmm. When you look, like, how much of that was like for how long were staff and all that, like, bro, we need to be doing a brick and mortar. We need to do a brick and mortar. And because I even said in the podcast, I'm like, Sean didn't need to do this. He's as good of a salesman. He could keep selling and evaluating this model from afar without the fucking risk. Mm-hmm. How long did you have like your people like, you know, making the suggestion and talking about it before you finally turned like, you know, okay, gave the green light?
It was somewhere between like 5 and 7 minutes.
Really?
They had dropped hints, but it wasn't, you know, I'll share the story for how this happened. It's less that I didn't want to do it and more that I didn't want to be responsible for executing it, because I know that my personal unique zone of genius is not in day-to-day management of anything. And it would be better for my marriage, better for my kids, better for everything in a vacuum if I had no role in that business. And frankly, I didn't have the creativity in my own mind to understand that, oh, well, there are people on our team or people who we haven't yet acquired to be on the team who would move to Long Beach, New York to execute this model on behalf of the company. Huh. Okay. And what happened was I went into a space. We were really at this tipping point with our own clients, and we can get to this later on if you want to discuss. I'm sure we will. Where they were like exiting the CrossFit space, but they were, if you took a picture of their gym, it was still CrossFit.
Yeah.
And so it was difficult to explain to the market, like, no, we're not. I know it looks like we are. I know you've seen pictures of that person wearing a shirt that says CrossFit. You're right. And I was like, we need to show them what it can look like. So I went into this space that was available for rent in our town, just to film a video tour of like how you could lay out one of these spaces. And then my plan was to go get some 3D renderings of what it could look like.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you wanted to show it, you could have came up with a square, a rectangle, an L-shaped, where like whatever the most common physical commercial real estate layouts are, and just had an interior design firm create the incomplete layout, what it would look like, square footage, all that.
So that was my thought. And then I walked through the space on camera, sent it to a few key members of our team, and they were like, we should open there. I said, what do you mean? Like, we need our own space. We should open in that space. It's perfect. And we did.
Big business. The first thing that was buzzing in my head is like, all right, so will the current standing Active Life LLC absorb the burden of this, or are we going to set up our own Active Life LLC so that it truly, because when I think of this, like, okay, we're doing this, and it's also, it's experimental. You want to be able to go to a conceptual Active Life. And just for my purposes of this statement, how many Active Life ProPath gyms are retrofitted versus conceptual? Meaning like someone came
all
to you.
All of them are retrofitted.
Okay.
So what we're doing, we're taking a business loan from Active Life Incorporated. Active Life Consulting Incorporated is the parent company.
Yep.
Active Life Long Beach Incorporated will take a business loan from the parent company, and it will form its own entity
Okay.
with backstopped by the larger company.
Got it. So we're not necessarily robbing Peter to pay Paul like a lot of guys do. And anyone listening to this, that's where you have location one and you go to open location two, but you use location one's success and money and profit to pay for location two. And you're never, ever really able to evaluate location two because Big Brother was constantly giving it a little bit of, you know, fucking walking around money every time they fell short on payday.
No, we're looking to create a starting working capital. And then that business has to run with its own starting working capital. And got it. That's it. Like now you profit, you loss, and you pay back that working capital to mom and dad.
Did you ever think, because going forward, you like, again, we have a lot of retrofitted CrossFits you're doing this with. Eventually though, I would love to believe that you're going to get conceptual gyms, someone who's heard of it and they've never owned one. They want to get one going, which is why this experiment is fun, because all your retrofitted ones currently had an existing clientele base. They're going to upset about 10 to 15% of them with the exchange, maybe 20%, whatever that number is, with them changing over to an active life model. But ultimately, they've still got, the well is deep enough they can drink from even during that thing. Is that number higher?
Oh, it's way higher. So way higher. The first thing I want to clarify is I just said, you know, the money's got to go back to mom and dad. I want to be clear. That was a joke. I'm mom and I'm dad. Active life parent company is mom and dad. This brick and mortar is the baby, and the baby's borrowing money from the parent company. It's got to give it back when it makes it back. Yeah. Now, yes. So here's what happens in the typical gym that we work with, Stu. We don't go from, like, people have this assumption that if I sign up with Active Life, I got to get rid of my group class tomorrow and go that model. That is not what happens. We're talking about a 10 to 12 month time span from I signed up to I'm even considering doing this. And what happens is phase one of working with us is let's just offer personal training to the members who are in your gym who you haven't been offering it to at the appropriate price for the appropriate reasons. Teach your staff how to sell it, teach your staff how to service it, build the appropriate packages, put the policies in place and start delivering.
Prove to yourself that there is a market for this internally before you fucking flip the script.
Not even for this, that there's a market that will pay that kind of money in your gym that's already there. Then, because they're not, like, this happens on day one. They're not even in our education yet. They're only in our mindset education. They're not learning how to assess. They're not learning how to, that doesn't happen right away. First, we're just flipping their mindset. They have more value than they understand. They're just not delivering it properly. Nobody wants to do the whiteboard workout one-on-one. So teaching them how to sell and deliver personal training sessions is step one. That raises revenue and confidence. Adding an on-ramp. Most gyms don't have an on-ramp, or if they do, it's 3 sessions, 5 sessions, 6 sessions, and everyone does them. Unless you come from another CrossFit gym, then you don't have to do them. Why? Why, if I come from another CrossFit gym with my wife who has a radically different training major, we're doing the same exact on-ramp?
Got it. And on-ramp just for you is the prerequisite personal training before you graduate.
In their world, because they're a group environment, right? So we're looking at, we now do a prescriptive on-ramp. There's a questionnaire. Everybody understands when they come in, look, based on our experience existing in this space for a long time, there are some predictable factors that are going to help us indicate injury and help us make sure you get to your results as fast as possible. Based on the way you answer these questions, we're going to prescribe you a given number of personal training sessions to start off your membership. Any questions before we start? No. Great. Let's get to it. And someone will start with anywhere from 1 to 27 personal training sessions. They start doing that. Oh my God, there's a market for this. Now they can afford to take the people who work for them very part-time, who don't want to work part-time, and say, look, we have a predictable 60, 70 personal training sessions a month at $100 a session. I can pay you an additional $3,000 a month in salary to run all these sessions. Yeah, man, I'll leave my job. And that climbs and climbs and climbs and climbs and climbs until it's time for what you would call a market correction on pricing, which we would agree is a market correction, but it's much more significant than most people are used to. It's not a 10 or 15%.
No, it's, yeah. Yeah. And talking with, you know, a handful of the clients that we share and all that, it's not your $20 per person jump.
No, it's often double. It's often a double, you know, it's close to doubling your price raise as possible. And in that case, yes, 10 to 20% of the gym will exit. In that case, it's still fairly sticky. People are like, oh my God, I'm going to double my membership, double my expense to the member. They're all going to leave. Now, if you do it right, and by the way, doing it right is fairly casual, the way you've described it. It's not like everybody will come to the gym on Sunday. We're taught none of that.
Yeah.
So the price raise is typically somewhere around doubling the membership rate, $100 a month up around that area is what we've seen. They lose about 10 to 20% of their membership when they do that. People tell them they're a terrible person. They're taking their gym away from them, all that. And then over the course of the next 6 to 8 months, what typically happens is they find that 60 to 70% of their revenue is coming from personal training and program design for members who come into the gym. Their total revenue is 2 to 3, maybe even 4x what it was before. And we're like, why are you continuing to deal with the hassle of 25% of your revenue coming from 80% of your people who are causing you 95% of your problems? And not because they're problematic people, because 80% of people have more problems than 20% of people.
But it's also the origin of where the, you know, the missile that launched from one of your podcasts entered a gym owner's brain was that you can't deliver optimal solutions and results to people in the group setting. This needs to be more tailored. So that, I mean, by nature, that needs to come down in importance.
Well, here's the thing, Stu. One of our values is compel, don't command. It's not a core value. It's a value in this program that we offer. And the idea is we don't tell gym owners, you have to get rid of your group class.
Yeah.
They look at us and they're like, hey, 70% of my income is coming from this 20% of my people. And they refer and they don't complain and they're respectful and they're clean. And they don't look at their credit card bill each month and say, hey, you're expensive. I don't like your programming. What should we do about that? Like, it might be time for you to get rid of your group class and just fill your gym with those people.
Yeah. Inspire, don't instruct. I love that. Because yes. And you've always said, don't try to sell people that aren't in the market for what you're selling. Right. And so, you know, in talking with people, anytime they're doing any kind of rebrand where the operating system is going to change, there is a long period of time for its content and its conversation and it's through the programming, but you literally created the world in which they live in. Nobody ever walked into the gym saying, I'm coming here to learn how to snatch. You convince them that was important. If you convince them that's important, you can convince them that X, Y, and Z is important or is not important. You have control. You have way more control than you think. Where I want to go, when I was asked, where I started with that, with the concepts and you doing the loan for this first, you know, brick and mortar location that you guys are doing, did you ever think about, okay, we're able to borrow from ourselves. That's rocks. At some point, I'm going to have a lot of concept gyms. Would it be wise, Mayor, at some point, do I need to create a relationship with a credit union, a small business lender, somebody? Because there are going to be concept gyms that are going to need lending. And, you know, find someone who's a preferred lender of Active Life for people who like equipment, like Clayton Ferrer, someone over there that can help with the equipment and the upfit or something, or some bank or some small credit union. How do you think of that going forward? Because we both know concepts will be one of your things, but a concept gym going to the bank saying, yeah, there's just this thing and you're not going to have the same credit at the bank as like a fucking Orange Theory is going to have, right? When they go and pitch that. Is there anything in the works right now from coming up with helpful alternatives, like preferred lenders and things like that for financing?
Honestly, I haven't gotten that far. You know, it's the reason I heard your reaction video today and it was spot on. The reason that we're doing this is the things that we're learning about how to deliver our own model on the ground are going to expedite the speed with which people who are already working with us are able to execute our model. And people who in the future who will want to work with us will be able to expedite our model. And I also think the vast majority in the short term are going to go through the same thing that everyone else has gone through. I'm talking the next 18 to 24 months. I think it's still going to be a lot of people retrofitting their CrossFit gym, you know, converting their membership over time, their HIIT studio, whatever have you, their personal training business. And once we have this threshold of all of these locations who've been successful and our own locations, our second, our third, then it becomes a thing where the people who you're talking about who want to maybe open something, park some cash and start with some financing to do it, then it becomes important that we're able to connect them with lenders. I haven't gotten there yet.
If someone has the option, they have the cash and they're like, hey, Sean, I've got this CrossFit gym. It's cash flow positive. The model isn't what I want to be. I don't believe in it anymore. But as an entity, as a cash flowing entity, it works. Do I keep that, Sean, and let that thing cash flow? I've got the money, or I can get the money and I go and open up a separate Active Life somewhere else in town and just see how it does. That way I hedge my bets.
I wouldn't look at that as a hedge. And my answer to that would be yes. Ideally, that's your perfect situation. I've had that conversation with several people. What you're asking is they have a, and this is important, they have a CrossFit gym or a HIIT studio that is unapologetically itself, which means you're not trying to blend it with seven different things and make it something for everybody. You're like, this is, we do really good CrossFit here. We put 120 people into the open every year, or we're a really good HIIT studio. Like our lights are sick. Our music is awesome. We DJ it. Like, yeah, don't blow that up. Keep that, grow that, let that be its own thing, exit it. And when I say exit, I mean from an energy and a time perspective, and put your money into an active life gym as a second location so that now you're in two different markets. Cause it's not a hedge. You're not.
Well, I'm saying hedging my bets that let's say I can't make the active life thing work. Or let's say my gym thing falls to shit when I leave. I've got the fallback plan. That's what I guess I meant by hedging.
Yeah. I don't like thinking of it as a fallback plan though, because then you have a reason to not push. I prefer to look at it as there's no reason to rock your cash flow. Like it's not broken.
Yeah.
If you are uninspired by it, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, which was, you know, why would people ever exit their model? Why would they ever sell and leave? I'm like, because eventually it does cap out. Eventually this is as big as it can get. And it doesn't matter if you're making $500,000 a year as the owner of one of these things. People seek growth. And if you can't see growth, if it doesn't exist, you need to move on. And you might want to take the cash that you can extract from a business like that and put it into something totally different. And that's when you would leave. Or you might want to take the cash flow and invest it into something different. And that's when you would expand to a second location, for example. But sometimes people are just like, I don't want to grow anymore. I don't want to be in it day to day anymore. And that's reasonable.
Yep.
And I want to go back to a point earlier that we were talking about. Most people, when we talk to them about charging $600 to $1,000 a month for a membership, are like, you are out of your fucking mind. You're out of your fucking mind. My members would never pay that. And then we say, you're right. You're right. They wouldn't pay that for what you're offering right now. Let's get them into personal training. A bunch of members start going through personal training. And now you look at, now tell me, what are those members paying on a monthly basis? $1,000, $1,200, $1,400. Oh, wow. Oh, okay. So they would pay that price if the service was valuable. Now, when you start looking at a $600 to $700 to $800 a month membership, it's a downsell. It's no longer this massive upsell. And it becomes much more intuitive to them that, oh, that makes a lot of sense. People would do that. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, very similar how OPEX did it. You came in and they pitched everything as personal training up front and then downsold them to individual design. Right now, you're not paying me $1,400, $1,500 a month for the one-on-one. You're going to pay $350, $400. You're going to meet with me once a month, but you're going to come in during these times and follow the program on the True Coach app or whatever it is. And there'll be a floor coach to answer your questions. But I mean, for your model, because you guys, this model touches group though. Like when people do get to go and experience the group thing to a degree, correct?
Depends on how you would define group. So the way ours works is it's personal training until you've established the competence and the confidence to do all of the things that we would ask you to do when someone is not watching you do every single rep. And we define competence, by the way, as you can do the thing properly 3 times in a row on separate occasions without any intervention from a staff member. Then we know you can do that thing. And you need to do that for everything that you would do in the room without a staff member watching you do it in order for us to believe that you know what you're doing and you're competent in it. Confidence is subjective. It's going to depend from person to person.
On the competence side, how do you guys test for that? Like, how is that established? Who gets the check mark and who doesn't?
The person observing them.
Okay.
So if you're doing a one-on-one training session with somebody, what did they do properly today without instruction compared to what did they do today improperly without instruction? And now we can start to look this workout to this workout to this workout. Oh, they were able to do a high pull properly 3 times in a row without any instruction. They must have competence in that movement.
Got it.
And what we're looking to do in our model is you don't necessarily work with the same coach every time you walk in. So you're working with our team of coaches. One of them is your assigned professional who would write the program. All of them are going to help you execute the program. Mm-hmm.
Which saves the owner from the fear of Coach Johnny leaves and takes 19 people with him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The other thing it saves, and people don't think about this as often, you don't lose the member because they didn't like Johnny.
Yes.
They can very comfortably come and say, I prefer to work with Ali.
And it also gives proof of putting, it gives kudos to the entire team versus, mm-hmm. oh, I've worked with him. He's a better trainer than that guy. Like everybody. And again, you for as an owner, you are able to easily see who's the better coach and who's not when everybody's had to touch Sally. Everyone's mm-hmm. coached Sally at least six times over the course of 6 months, however many is. And Sally's able to give you feedback. I've worked with everyone. And Stu's a dickhead. Like, I don't mm-hmm. like him. Like, he's, you know, you're able to get some really good qualitative feedback there. Because anyone who's got a personal trainer, ask them what they think of their personal trainer. They fucking love their personal trainer, right? They've had him mm-hmm. for years. There's a bias there, that kind of scenario. Even if he fucks up, shows up late on his cell phone, the client sometimes lets that slide because of that relationship that they've formed.
Totally. And I didn't answer your question about the group. But the group that you're describing is... we have what we call autonomous training sessions, which means you're coming at a time certain and you're in a room with other people and every rep is overseen by a professional on staff in the room, but you're getting individual design.
Got it. So, and there's a floor coach type scenario.
Correct. The reason why it can be interpreted as group is because we have a little bit of a divergence of the belief of the importance of the conditioning piece from a company like an OPEX, who you mentioned before. What I looked to do when setting out to create this model, and I want to be clear, it wasn't me, it was a lot of us. But one of the things that was important and clear to me when we started was the things that cause the most friction in an individual design business are the time it takes the coach to write the varied pieces of conditioning, and did I do muscle ups last week? Like, I haven't had this person do this exercise in a while. And I don't think that the 10th of a second longer that person holds a pace actually makes enough of a difference for that to be worth it, unless you're working with an athlete for whom that's significantly important. And we're working with people who want to reclaim active lives. Like, they haven't ever maxed out an echo pike. They don't need to worry about how long their pace is on it, if that makes sense, especially not in the very beginning. So we write a program that makes it easy for the coaches on staff, the professionals on staff, I keep saying coaches, we call them professionals, to edit so that they don't have to spend all of that time. And then it allows people to talk about what today's workout was like for them.
If you don't mind me asking, what is Active Life Proper going to be loaning this built location?
Roughly 3.
Okay. So 300,000 is what you're loading them. And mm-hmm. that's going to cover build out initial staff type scenario. What is an opening active life? What does that HR, what does that bench look like?
So we're between 3 and 4 professionals, yep. and a leader. So okay. effectively an operations lead and then 3 to 4 people responsible for executing all of the sessions when people come in the door.
Will you have anyone from the corporate now? Like, will Larry assume any roles in this brick and mortar? Will he be doing any work there? Like, or is this everyone fresh, like fresh fish being brought in?
So great question. What we were able to do was attract one of our better clients, one of our more established, just professional clients.
Gym owner or just a trainer?
Gym owner. So his name is okay. Cody Ringel. He's in the other room right now, actually.
Cody's here? I told him I said hi.
Oh, you know Cody?
Yeah, work with Cody.
Okay. So yeah. Cody left Coldwater, Michigan.
Yep.
And moved to Long Beach, New York. And he's continuing to have his gym operate in Coldwater, Michigan, while he is down here as the lead for our gym in Long Beach.
Yeah.
Which is also a testament to the model. He's leaving an active gym that he's not closing, he's not selling.
Yeah, me and Cody worked together, you know, very heavily during that process and getting James up and going and all that good stuff. And yeah, so good dude. Leaving Clearwater, Michigan for Long Beach. I guess it's better. Is that better?
Switch. I don't know if it's better, but it's a bit of a switch.
It is a bit of a switch.
The corn's not as fresh here. but you know, he's going to be great.
Yeah, that's great.
And we're attracting an old personal training client of mine who's also gone through our ALP education, named Ali Hashmi, who's going to be one of the professionals. He's leaving his job right now to come and do it. Should probably beep that out because I don't know if he's told his boss that yet.
Noted.
Yeah. So he's going to be leaving his personal training career to come and work with us. And then we're looking to fill it with 2 to 3 other professionals. And we have a bunch of applications we're going through and conducting interviews now.
Okay. So with this, and from a financial standpoint, one of the things I said in the video is like, I'm super proud of my boy, Sean, to do this. Cause again, I don't think he had to. I think you could have made a perfectly good argument for not doing it when looking at the risk you're going out there, because you do this, you're putting your nuts out there. And if it were to not work out, right, in 9 months, people see that Cody's back in Clearwater, Michigan. The last guy you just said, fucking whatever, he's gone, like something bad, like it just, for whatever reason, it just employed, something didn't go great. You like the damage control on that is, I would imagine it's got to be, I mean, that's got to be something that's weighed in your head.
It didn't. It's something I thought about, but the way, so here's how I can describe it to you. We didn't have to do it for money. We did have to do it for mission. And we've talked in the past, you and me, that, you know, we are a mission-oriented company. This isn't fly by night. It's not just make Sean enough money until he can retire and then, you know, sail off into the sunset. And there's nothing wrong with people who have businesses that do that. For me, it's about a lot more than that. And I talked to several hospital coordinators in the last 6 months. Every single one of them, their question was, yeah, we want to work with that gym. Is there one near my hospital? I'm like, fuck. No. And what I can't do is I can't go to a potential business owner and say, you should open an Active Life near this hospital, because I can connect you with Betsy, who works there today, but might not in 6 months, who gave me her word on a private phone call that this is something that she wants to do. I have to put my own balls on the table to do that. And so I firmly believe that if we're truly going to bridge the gap between fitness and healthcare in a way that right now the fitness industry doesn't do it and the healthcare industry doesn't do it, we have to grab that bull by the horns and do it ourselves.
The $300,000 that you're borrowing, how much of that is runway and payroll? So you're bringing these people in, they're obviously relocating. Most of it's runway and payroll. So, and does that get you a year? Does that get you 18 months? How much runway does it get you?
It gets us about a year.
Okay. So you've got to... Yeah, go ahead.
You know, pending construction. I mean, we my wife and I were going to redo our house. It was going to cost us X amount of dollars. It ended up costing X amount times 2.5.
Yes.
Right. So it gets us a year as long as we don't go nuts. Most of the money is for staff payroll for runway, because one of the things that we are doing very differently is offering people a career right from the outset.
That's where I was going with this, is you're not doing the traditional one. And I always tell people, do not start your business underfunded. I'd rather you fucking sit on your ass for another year and miss that awesome opportunity building or whatever the fuck you think you have to actually have enough money to do this thing. Cause you start underfunded. The second you hit like a lack of oxygen, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for us, it was almost the opposite of that. Like there are not many places in the town where I live that I would be interested in opening this. Like in terms of their layout, the difficulty of getting the appropriate zoning, all of that. The place we're moving into was a fitness concept before us. So the zoning is already appropriate. The layout is already like the upfit is knocking down some walls that never should have been there.
Sure.
You know, and then painting, tiling, flooring, that kind of stuff, new lighting, but that's not going to be that big of a financial lift, knock on wood. After that, it's all, and then the equipment is, you know, another $50,000-$60,000, let's say. After that, it's staff. And you know, we want to make sure that we're able to accommodate the number of people who enroll, and we don't know how many are going to enroll in pre-sale. So we're kind of playing that game of, well, let's start with 2, move to 3, move to 4 quickly. And ultimately the place caps at 6 to 7.
So someone asked me, he's like, so is Sean going to do franchise or license? And I said, well, it's really, here's the thing with with that. And if anyone's kind of studied this, it's really hard to go franchise if you're gonna be retrofitting spaces, because everyone you're retrofitting, you know, telling people you do this and all these facilities are different. They all have different characteristics, different part of town. Whereas a franchising, you got to dial this thing in pretty fucking specifically to be able to make the promises to the franchisee that you're going to be making via your FDD docs. So am I right in saying you guys are licensing this?
No.
You're going to franchise?
No. We haven't decided we're going to do either of those things yet.
Is there a third option I don't know of?
Open a bunch of corporate stores.
Got it. Okay. So you will own all of these.
Perhaps. That's the option that to me right now feels the most natural, because I'll put it to you this way. When I lose sleep at night, it's never over my ability to make an income personally. It's over my ability to continue providing an income for everybody on our team and affording our clients the ability to continue providing an income to themselves. If I can reduce the number of hooks that need to be out there, that's ideal. The part of the job that I dislike the most as the owner of the company, and it's not even my job to do this all the time, is the client acquisition. You know, like I dislike the conversations around, well, why are we different than this company? Why are we different than that company? I'm like, let's forget about all of that. Let's start with values. Which client would you rather serve? The one who walks into your space and says, I am pre-diabetic. I have a knee problem. And every time I exercise, my knee hurts. The doctor said I need to start or I'm going to end up, you know, on insulin. And I'm interested in your space. Do you want that to be your primary client? And that's the extreme. I understand that. Or do you want the person who walks in and says, the gym I was at, the workouts weren't hard enough. I just need someone who can challenge me. Which person is the one that you want to really serve? And if the answer is the former, well, then I think that then you need to work with us. I don't believe that there's another company in the space right now who is helping gyms to convert their offerings, train their staff in such a way that they can predictably service that person.
Correct. And you know me, I retention versus client acquisition. We've had this conversation a bunch of times. When you're a brand new concept, which you are in the market, like this is not like, again, you lay out all the fucking boutique and micro gym and the whole thing. This is very niched in. Niched in is great. Niched in is very, has a ton of upside. Niched in is hard as fuck to megaphone. And eventually, at some point, you cannot just rely on like referrals from current customers. Those are great. Those cannot be the only acquisition. So are you hoping on really creating these doctor relationships and using those guys as the top, like a main funnel source?
I don't think we're going to need them, Stu. So the answer is yes, they'll be a big referral source. But first and foremost, to make it clear to people who are listening, yes, we're still taking clients. Right. And I don't see the day that we take clients ending, because one of the ways that I see us acquiring gyms and owning them ourselves, owning spaces ourselves, is by helping somebody become a great operator of our model and then giving them their exit and saying, you can now come help us help somebody else get to where you just were and collect a double salary. You get paid an active life from the gym that you owned and you operated that we bought you out of by continuing to pay you a salary, despite the fact you're not working there and we're running it now. And we're going to pay you a salary to mentor other gym owners. That's one of the directions that I'm looking towards taking us in the future, so that these people have nothing to, like, there's no fear of losing in the end. There's no fear of like, what do I do when it's time to sell it? There's no one to buy it. If you've ever tried to sell a gym, what a nightmare, right? Like, who do you sell it to? The coach in your gym who you've paid maybe fairly, but they didn't put enough money away to give you a lump sum. And then they go try to get a loan from the bank and the bank is like, I don't know. So we want to be that right now, romantically, I want to be that parachute for our clients and help them move to the right space. And you help us operate it to the following KPIs and you can exit and help us mentor other gym owners along the lines of what Cody is doing, except we didn't take over his gym. That's the route that I'm looking to go. The other side of this though, Stu, is the reason I'm saying I don't think we'll need the doctors is, picture this, because this is the sign that we're going to put up outside of our space soon that is yet to open. Outside of our space, we're going to put up a sign that's the size, it's retail, so everyone will see it. It's going to be a sign that's going to be the size of the entire front of the building to block off all the construction and like, boom, big, bold letters and our fonts and our colors that says, what if, you finally had peace of mind exercising. You could be active without fear. These were the best years of your life. You felt confident again. You could. There isn't another gym in town that can say those things to people and keep those promises. So I think that you're going to have people drive by this sign and be like, that's resonant with me. And there isn't anyone else in town offering that to me. I think we're going to speak to 1,000 people and sign up 100.
And to that point, anyone can say that. Now it'll take a while of time for a customer to realize you didn't really deliver on it, or I don't have the results that I was looking for. And now you guys can say it, and I believe you're able to create the results and, you know, the end goal that that person was looking for. It's the main thing that I still think of when I'm thinking of this and kickstarting this thing brand new is, again, day one, you've got 3 to 4 people. So, you know, like, is there going to be a pre-sell? Is there going to be any way for you guys, like on day, when you guys have a grand opening, are you guys going to have some clients already in there? Yes. What does that look like?
I would like to open with our operating expenses covered.
In the black. Just be at a wash.
Yeah, and at a wash. Like the black, but all reinvested black. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal, which to us is going to look like 32 to 35 clients enrolled. That's where we need to start. I believe we can do that. The complicating factor of what we're trying to do, and this speaks to why we needed to do this, is if all 32 to 35 of those people need personal training, and the average person is training with us 3 times a week, and the average person needs 15 training sessions, that's 5 weeks of training. And if we have, let's say we want a staff member training no more than 30 sessions in a week, well, now each staff member can only be responsible for 10 gym members, 10 gym clients, or 10, I got to start using the right terminology. I use others for, but 10 clients. So now what? We can only take 30 to start. And then once they're in, it's a little bit different. Now we need the next 30.
So is there a ratio? So, you know, I look at a shell space, a facility. I understand the model, the person looking at the building. We've talked numbers, and I can look at that space and I can have an idea on the floor, and I can start coming up with some rough numbers as to what they're going to make per month. Have you come up? Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask for you. Have you come up with okay, this location is going to cost operating expenses every month. We're going to need to generate $50,000 a month for this thing to be profitable to a decent margin and create the whole proof of concept. How many customers is that? And then, cause your model, as you grow customers, how big and exponential is that growth of HR? That's typically the biggest burden with any kind of personal training-esque model. More customers, more staff. Yep. And eventually that table gets very long, not always very, not always quality.
Yep. So great question. And credit to Mary Banks on this. Mary is responsible for all of our curriculum and our financials. Not our company financials, but the financials of this business build out and the financials of our client businesses. She's scaled it out in such a way that even with 6 staff members earning about $110,000 per year each, we would be 48,000 a month profitable, which ends up being right around, I think, 40%, if I'm not mistaken, 41%.
So 6 staff members earning 110 is $660,000 a year. And that's just in payroll. Mm-hmm. Okay. And at it, well, you said
plus you got to remember the leader. So it ends up being closer to like 750.
So how much revenue is a facility like this bringing in? If you're 48% margin and you have $700,000+ in
payroll. If we get to that, that's our capacity. Cause what we have to do in our case, because of the way that we're heavy burdening this on staff, right? This is a human job and they're going to get paid really well to do really important work. So we had to do it on our very worst case scenario at scale, right? The early numbers are easy, but what you were describing is true. What happens when you start to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow? You could end up with an HR problem where you have more people, more payroll than profit, and you're in a hole. So at that point, the business would be doing roughly $130,000 a month.
All right. So, and again, this is the best part about this whole conversation is everything is on spec, right? Mm-hmm. This like, so it's 1.5 mil a year at that kind of monthly revenue number, right? Kind of like mm-hmm. gross kind of scenario.
Let's see if I can pull it up.
How many years does it take to get there? Do we project 3, 5?
Oh man, great question. I would love to say one, probably 2 to 3.
Dude, if you could do it in one, you'd have a few guys from Equinox and fucking TSI and fucking Exponential lining up to blow you and figure out exactly what you're doing.
Equinox is no.
Trust me, anyone who has money in fitness, if you could show that in a year I'm doing 1.5 at this profit margin, it doesn't matter what they've done in the past. So they would be interested. They're money guys.
100%. Trying to pull up our numbers here. I knew you would come to these questions, and I was thinking about asking Mary to join the call, and then I didn't because I'm stupid. I should have.
Just a big fucking dummy.
So dumb.
It's just, I mean, again, like I love the aspiration of it. And I'm sure, you know, again, Mary been with the company for a while?
Mary was a client.
Okay.
And then they ran into a situation at their gym. They were finally doing pretty well. And to make a long story short, they didn't love owning a gym anymore. And so her husband went and took a job working with some remote coaching, and she came and joined us full time.
Okay. So I'm sure she's crossed the T's, dot the I's on this stuff. And it'll be interesting to see at what point does it hit the projection. I'm very curious as to how far out, like in her pro forma, does she have that number? I mean, you know,
she doesn't. That's something that we haven't built out in our pro forma because we don't want to, like, the biggest mistake I made when I opened gyms in the first place was, oh yeah, we get to this many members, we'll break even, and then we'll have this many members by this month and this many members by this month. And it was all wrong. So all we have is what I asked Mary to build out, and she did a really good job of, is this is what it would cost us to service this much income at any given time, which means it doesn't matter what the rate that we get there at is. It's to drive this much income. These are our known costs to it. Now, could taxes go up by 2x? Sure, but that's not what we're anticipating.
What kind of lease terms are you signing?
5-year lease with a 5-year renewal option. It's in my hands.
They make you sign a PG?
Yep. A 1-year rolling personal guarantee.
Okay.
So what that means for anyone listening is my name is on the lease. No matter what, it comes down to me. And after the first year, I'm constantly a year out. So it's basically 2 years to start. And if I said, I want to pull my personal guarantee, I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore. I need to get out of this building, or we're opening a bigger one somewhere else, or whatever have you. They are allowed to start showing the space while we're operational, but I'm on the hook for the rent for the next 12 months. And if they find a tenant, I can vacate. If they don't find a tenant, I am there no matter what, paying that rent.
And again, in my opinion, it wouldn't make sense to go to have one mega big location, especially if the goal is helping a bunch of people. It's better to have multiple locations in different areas where more people can access it.
Yeah. So for us, it's much more of a several locations than large locations. Also because of the environment we want to be in the space.
Yes.
Big spaces with many people. Even if you said we have 5 coaches, if there is 50 people in the room. So you're always at a 10-to-1 minimum. Everyone, 50 people. That's scary. So we want to keep it always to an intimate environment where our goal is 80% capacity to max 10-to-1.
Got it. Who are you guys hiring to do the interior design and build up?
Local guy who's what's that?
And like the interior design and like, you know, installing the branding and making the place come to life, all that.
We have a local designer who's been a personal training client of Larry's for a long time.
Great.
Who we're jumping in with.
So all the current guys, I should have probably asked this in the beginning. How many current pro path gyms are there who are in they're on the journey to doing the conversion and being to where this model is today?
All of them.
All of them. Okay. So what's that number?
Roughly 60, I think, today.
Okay. So 60 gyms, and they're all on Journey somewhere.
Yep. So everyone is here. Here's what I explain to people. This is another reason why we need to do it. Everybody is somewhere between I enrolled yesterday and I still run a CrossFit gym, or I enrolled yesterday. And in one case, a gym who just enrolled with us, they run what they would consider a very similar version to ours, but it's so grossly underpriced that they're going to face the same process that everybody else faces, right? Like they don't offer any one-on-one. They're going to start offering one-on-one. They're going to price correct. They're going to change the way people come in the door. Then their prices are going to go up, and then everything is going to change the same way. So, and then you have gyms who, in one case, Mike DeMarco in somewhere in New Jersey recently sold his rig on Craigslist. You know, the thing is though, he's still, and he got rid of his group class. And now he's got, I believe, 70 or so people, 60 people. No, whatever it is. I don't remember the number, but he's doing 3x the revenue from when he started with us, or 4x, and he's only doing our model now. But he's doing less revenue than he was 2 months ago when he still had his group class that he just cut off. So it's still painful. But when you look at pictures of his space, it's still a nice CrossFit gym. And I wouldn't ask him to move yet. At the same time, we have a gym who we work with in Palm Beach, Florida. I talked to the owner and I was talking with my realistic tone. Like, look, we can do it gradually and this. He's like, look, I've seen what you do. It works. It's working in our space. And we now have this problem where we're kind of like neither here nor there. And we need to make a decision as to which way we want to go. I could make more money renting this gym space as a high-end car storage spot than I could ever, no matter what gym model you offer me.
Yeah.
I could make more money renting high-end car storage here and open an active life in a retail space in a shopping center where it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we're talking about it like that. Okay. Yeah, do that.
For these ProPath gyms, what year was ProPath like founded?
September 2019.
Okay.
It was one of those, my mentor, Ken Andruko, said to me, I've never seen a company who helps coaches convert a hobby into a career the way that you guys do it. And he's like, and I've been in the space for 20 years. Everyone says they can help you do personal training and then nobody does it. You guys say you can do it and then you do it. And he's like, I've never seen anything like it. You should be teaching gym owners. I'm like, they keep asking, but like, I wasn't the best gym owner. I had one that failed. I had one that I lost in a hurricane. And I had one that I was fortunate to be successful and I was able to sell in exchange for this business. Right? Like, who am I to do this? He's like, just do it. So we started doing it in September of 2019.
And I guess what I'm curious on is for the ProPath, if we were to look at like, what's the washout rate? How many people make it all the way through?
Most. So most people make it all the way. Here's the thing about all the way through, right? All the way through means your staff finished the curriculum, which is 13 months for their staff members of education. Most of our clients stay with us close to 2 years. And the only reason we don't have data that's longer than that is we haven't been doing it long enough.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 years since you started. But for you guys, with finishing like now, I mean, cause like you said, like, and I think I summarized this in my reaction video, you started off getting people out of pain without missing the gym or going to see a doctor. Then you can, you know, went and taught coaches how to do this. And then you started working mm-hmm. with gym owners. So they had a model in which these coaches could do this in. So the end goal, mm-hmm. getting people through now is ultimately creating a ProPath active life gym, right? So yep. For everyone here that you don't own their business, right? You don't own the corporate shop of theirs, but like David, let's use Ruben down at Courage Fitness Durham.
Yep, Durham.
So is he all the way at that model yet? Like, is he at the end state?
He's a great example of why we needed to do it. Dave. So to give some context, he's a phenomenal gym owner with outstanding staff. You couldn't ask for a better combination of ownership and staff than what they have at Courage Fitness Durham. And they do very well financially. They offer individual design, they offer personal training, and they offer a group class. And it doesn't necessarily make sense for them to switch to doing full active life yet, because their numbers are so good that to make this switch is risky for maybe no reason. Maybe what they're experiencing, and they would tell you, is they still are facing the situation where members are asking, okay, so what's the future here? Because I've noticed that we went from being unapologetic CrossFit to this thing that feels very different. I like it. I'm still happy to keep coming and paying. But where does this end up? Right. And at the same time, they're not going to attract many of the people in the marketplace who would come if they didn't have the group. So they have to decide for themselves eventually if they're okay with punting on the potential new clients, or if they're okay with punting on the known revenue.
Got it. And so like a guy like Ruben, was he early on? Was he like, has he been in the program for a while?
He was not early on, but he has been in the program for about a year and a half.
Got it. So is the end state, because like you kind of got someone like him halfway or a little more than half, whatever it is,
two thirds,
he still got the CrossFit thing. Financially, it doesn't make sense. I mean, is that a fate that a lot of these remote pro path gyms that you're working with might face, where it's like, okay, the active life thing's doing really well, the CrossFit thing's also doing really well. So do I cut off my nose despite my face, or do I eventually just go and open up a third location and make that a virgin, unadulterated fucking version of active life, and I don't have to worry about anything else?
It's a great question. And that's the answer that he has to make for himself. You know, because here's what I would argue. If he went and opened up a second space, the people who are currently taking him up on the personal training and the individual design offer would rather be in that new space. They'd rather be there than in the space he's in right now. So does he end up robbing Peter to pay Paul?
Sure, exactly.
Does he end up losing that revenue there? I think the answer is probably yes. And so at a certain point, unless he opens it far enough away, he either says, I have this thing and I love it and it's great and I don't need to change anything about it. And that's fine. Good for him. Or he says, I need to take a bigger step, and he does it.
Yeah, but that's also the thing. Like right now, it's like, okay, I've got these two things. Which one's my alpha? Like, which one of these programs is really the thing? And you wouldn't.
Well, it's clear to anybody who's doing it. Okay. I promise you.
Okay, so the active life thing is the alpha, mm-hmm. And we also, if we think long term, this is so different and unique in the market that as more and more and more and more boutique pop up, does my CrossFit thing become less unique in the market, and my active life thing actually becomes more unique in the market? So my stock in one goes down and it goes up in the other.
I think the answer to that's already emphatically yes. That's why, you know, here's the thing. In my reaction video to the new CrossFit conversation that came out, that all you need is your level one to open a gym, and that world-class coaches come out of the level one, I talked about, I think that it's because like CrossFit as an entity in itself faces the problem of competing with people who've come out of CrossFit, who have said, I see the problems here that you're unwilling to make changes to, the metabolics of the world. And those places are going to come to the same towns, charge an extra 60% on membership, and get the members. They're going to have the volume and the higher price. The whole idea of arms theory came out of CrossFit. Right. So it was a gym owner who was
Florida.
Like, there you go. So what I'm driving at here is, as there are more and more, I talked about it as ice cream. It's all different flavors of ice cream, right? How do you want to get your abs? How do you want to lose weight? How do you want to, you know, get super fit? How do you want to feel strong? All of those things, they're all ice cream. And now you're not only competing with vanilla, chocolate, pistachio, and, you know, cookie dough, you're also competing with the online version of the same thing, where what we teach people to do is the only thing out there where all of those other places become your referral sources. Because you're the only one who can say, you've tried all of these other things, and these were the problems that you ran into. And we have a solution where you are our primary client, not somebody who we can help on the side.
And which for active life, that truly does mean you're going after someone different. I've heard you say, we're not going after people who want ice cream then, right?
No.
That's correct. So that means you need X amount of people in the marketplace who do not want ice cream. I use this example often. In 2007 or six, so I live in South End. This is the borough of Charlotte, North Carolina. The South End Brewery opened up in like 06. Microbrewery. Mm-hmm. Fucking ate shit and died. It was about 7 years too early. Right. Mm-hmm. Like the market didn't realize that they wanted hoppier IPAs and unique stuff, but they just wanted a Bud Light and a Mick Ultra. Right. That was the market wasn't aware of what they do. You believe that are the boutiques of the world and the standard status quo micro gym of the world creating the education needed? Cause you guys have to educate a market that there is something more out there. Cause if everyone's just eating ice cream, and you're over there, let's say you're Froyo, and you know, that's maybe a bad example, but like it's something different, kind of. Mm-hmm. It might look like ice cream. People might walk in, and that's my next question, is how are you gonna make this look different physically, like mm-hmm. aesthetically, but like it kind of looks like ice cream, but it's not. I don't really know how much different it is. I don't think I've eaten Froyo, but it's fucking different. And mm-hmm. are you gonna hopefully rely on all these CrossFit gyms fucking people up, all these boutique fitnesses boring the shit out of people and getting them overuse injuries, and the market? You know, I see all the stats, like X amount of knee replacements in the next few years, like all these health, you know, issues.
We don't need to do all that. I don't think that CrossFit gyms are fucking people up at such a rate that we could fill our gym on people who got fucked up at CrossFit. I don't think that HIIT studios are boring people at such a rate that we could fill up on people who are boring themselves at HIIT studios. I think that we're going to get people who neither of those entities speak to. Here's the thing. The year 2000, there were 32 million people with gym memberships in the United States. The year 2019, I don't know what it is after COVID, 65 million people. So what that means is the number of people with a fitness membership doubled, even with the online stuff starting to come in. Next, the average person who enrolled in one of these gyms was 25. When you're 25 years old, you're looking to get laid.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're not worried about the big problems.
That's what you're buying. You're buying sex. It's 20 years later. How many people got into fitness in the last 20 years looking for sex who now just want to live a longer, more healthy, more fulfilled life? And who's speaking to these people? The only entities out there who are talking to the audience about longevity are recovery studios, salt caves, saunas. Like that's who's talking. It's all like, oh, working out doesn't help you live longer. These things do. When you're done in your 20s and 30s working out, come do these things and that's your fix. I don't think that we need those places to do a bad job for us to be successful, because I think that they're not talking to the person who we're going to talk to.
And so I've seen obviously the cold plunge sauna extravaganza that's happened in the past 3 to 4 years. And where I think the marketing opportunity there is, fitness is very much a suffer fest right now. Mm-hmm. It's currently very much a suffer fest. It's the opposite of the spectrum. And anytime you have someone on this end of the spectrum, so that's why, like, look at McDonald's and Burger King gave way to things like a Chipotle, a healthier looking fast food restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different versions of this, Cava and all this other shit, chopped salad bar. Like, they're all fast food. They're just a high end version of fast food, because now health and nutrition and whatever, it's always going to go to the, you know, whatever you build up on this end of the spectrum, you've always got market opportunity on the other. And I guess that's where I was kind of going with it. Like, is the suffer fest, hardcore workout, dead on the ground kind of thing, that's really the thing that's going to give way to anything like sauna and ice baths and shit like that. And then programs that are fitness based that are serving the opposite.
Well, here's the thing, Stu. Nobody is getting out of knee pain sitting in the sauna. Nobody is getting, you know, nobody is losing 100 pounds getting into an ice bath or sleeping better. Nobody is feeling like they have peace of mind that they have good cardiorespiratory health by buying a cooled mattress. Those things aren't happening. And there's always going to be a space for people to want to shrink the time it takes for them to feel like things are working and work with a professional who can get them there. That's what you do for gym owners. It's what we do for coaches. It's what we do for gym owners. It's what we do for people who want to get out of pain. We shrink time. They pay to shrink the time.
Because you guys don't have a UBF, CrossFit's got their unique belief in fitness. Orange Theory's got theirs. Metabolic's got theirs. But Active Life doesn't exactly have a unique methodology, belief in fitness. They are, you're going to utilize the thing that you think is best for somebody. So everyone going to an Active Life, when they say, what kind of workouts or how does it go? The actual workout part, the sexy conversational part is always, it's, there's, there won't be a lot of consistency in that, correct?
No, it'll be extremely consistent. It's the one you need. And the thing is, you know, one of my favorite sports stories, even though I hate the New England Patriots, even though I don't even really watch sports anymore, I still hate the New England Patriots. There's a story about when a guy named Channing Marsh left the New England Patriots and he started getting interviews with all these magazines because he wrote a blog post that said, there's no fun in New England. It's not fun to play there. And it got a lot of press because no one ever talked crap on New England after they left. And the players started getting distracted by it because people started asking, like, hey, is it true? It's no fun. Is it true that they do this? True that they do that? And Julian Edelman, who's a future Hall of Fame wide receiver, walked into the locker room and went to the whiteboard and just wrote, winning is fun, and put the marker down and left. And the point he was making was like, you want to have fun every day? Go, sure, go play for the Jets. I can tell you how that is as a Jets fan growing up. It's fun every day except Sunday. To us, fun and sexy is we promise you the results that you ask for and you get them. I don't need you to come meet your wife at our gym. I don't care if we're your third place and you hang out all day. If we're the best hour of your day, we did a bad job. But we're going to do a really good job making sure that you get 23 other hours that are pretty awesome.
Is that going to be an angle in the marketing where, and this is the wrong word, but like, it's not sexy, but it works, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that is what I'm saying is it working being is sexy. And no, it's not going to be an angle in the marketplace because remember, we're not looking to pull people out of CrossFit gyms or Orange Theories or HIIT studios. We're looking to pull people out of their homes.
Do you believe that? So let's say someone goes from home to you.
Mm-hmm.
It probably, I mean, does it help or hurt for them to have a prerequisite fitness background where they have paid $200+ a month at a studio to be price point sensitive, or would you rather them be a unicorn? They're not even aware how much a fucking Orange Theory costs.
I'd rather the person who's a member of the golf club or the tennis club, who's paying, you know, they paid $50,000 or $40,000 to get their membership, and now they're paying $12,000 a year for access to the course, and then they get the privilege of paying every time they show up, plus going to the bar.
Yeah. So in country clubs and all that, we all agree are status based. Is there a play in mind to make Active Life? And you know Equinox, right? People who've got the fucking black, you know, Knox card that fucking's like a black, an Amex black card. Like, is there going to be any way to create a status around being an Active Life client? Because when you're not going to actively market status and creating status around the members to the customers, the clients to have status in this and tout it around with their friends, family, and their ecosystem as, you're at that gym. Now I do this other thing. That is a very strong marketing play. When you don't want to go out and start doing CAS, client acquisition system based marketing plays.
We're going to do status and we're going to do status without being snooty about it. You know, because what we're going to ask the people who come in to use what they learn to influence the people who they see every day and not to get them to join. You know, the thing that I am at the most at odds with right now is this works really well. We know that the ability to help the person get the results that they want works really well almost every single time. I also know that not everybody can afford $10,000 to $12,000 a year to be a member of a fitness space or, you know, to reclaim their active lifestyle. I want it to be accessible to everybody, but I also know that it won't be accessible to everybody right now. And we need to show that it works so many times, so consistently, that it becomes accessible to everybody else. And so if we end up playing up on status, it's going to be the people who are interested in using their status to influence positive change in the local marketplace, not just like wearing their shirt around to say, I'm better than you.
Sure. And when we look at this, how much transparency will you guys have? Because again, this is like, you know, if I threw 20 cameras in there and I create a reality show out of this is essentially like you're building the plane while you fly it type scenario. Yep. How much transparency with your current ProPath gyms will there be? Like, because they're going to want to know, Like a lot. How many people came in this month? What are you making per month? Like,
yeah. So at least, I mean, I'm making up a random number. 40% of the value of doing this is the ability to share that kind of information with them. And the ability, like, so for example, we don't know what the top price point is that works at these places. We know how much people can get, but we don't know how high it can go. And I don't want to tell a gym owner who's working with us, no, charge an extra $100 a month and have them be like, dude, nobody is paying. I'm like, well, let's work on your salesmanship. No, you don't understand. It's not worth an extra $100. I want to make that mistake. I want to make that mistake in our space. And then I can tell our clients, hey, here's a mistake that we made. Here's how you avoid it. And here's what we were intending to do. Here's how you can do that successfully without first enduring the error.
You looked into like, well, is this going to be something? Are you guys going to use platform software like a True Coach or CoachRx, or are you going to have standard member management software? Have you looked at like that? Because there's some common elements that every micro gym in this will still share.
So today, yes. Tomorrow, we intend to build it.
Why?
Because.
I mean, do you really like, you look at some like True Coach?
I have no interest, but we have to. I'll share why. Because of how niche we are. No platform works for what we're looking to do. Like no platform in the micro gym space has any kind of a metric by which they can measure which coach worked with which client on what date and then roll that up into payroll. It's still manual. How many sessions did this person do this month? Okay, great. What's their payable on those sessions? Okay, great. Now we put that into the payroll system. No system in the micro gym space is able to say yet, this person purchased this many sessions at this rate and they have this many left after they trained today. Now, the commercial gym space has that, but the commercial gym space software has its own inherent problems that don't serve the smaller boutique space. So we run into this thing where we're going to have to use something to the best of its ability and ultimately either have them help evolve with us or build our own software. Less likely we'll need to build, but the programming software, True Coach right now, I don't want random video from YouTube showing up in somebody's program when they're inside the gym. I want an active life. We have 800 videos.
Yeah, well, True Coach allows you that you can get rid of, they've got that central athlete library, but you can gut that.
You can't get rid of it all. Like it's kind of like picking weeds in your garden. Like they just keep coming back. That's one problem. You know, another thing is it doesn't communicate with the other software. So are we programming for someone who's still not paying? Like these kinds of things become an issue. We also want our financials to be very visible to the members. I mean, to our clients who are gym owner members, so that we can see their finances from where we can help to drive their business better. And right now we're still having to track things on a Google spreadsheet and pull the appropriate report. We'd like to have that all be automatically generated.
This, you know, again, you, this thing creates the proof of concept and the documentation, the real live documentation that this model, conceptually, like at a concept from zero, starting with no clients to boom, which is the hardest one to do. The retrofitting, like I said, not that that's not difficult. It's difficult in a different way, more emotional than it is the actual challenge of going from a building with zero people in it to a building with X amount of people in it.
Yeah.
Has anyone raised their hand and be like, can I do this in my city at the same time you're doing this? And would you allow that? You'd be like, well, let us do this shit here first.
Plenty of people have asked and they don't need us to do it first. And I'll tell you why. It goes back to values. If you're going to open a business and you're going to open a business that solves this set of problems, we're still a better option for you without having proven it from the ground up. And you want to do it from the ground up. We're still a better option than you not doing anything if you want to solve this problem. The thing I won't do is promise anybody something that I can't promise them. And that goes for the same thing for our members. So the difference right now is if we were a franchise, which I don't believe is our path, I'm charging you $60,000 up front, plus you're having to do a $250,000 upfit. And I need to see you have $1 million in the bank that I can be sure you're not going to be underfunded on, because I don't want my model to fail in your city and give me bad press. I wouldn't make that kind of a promise or that kind of a demand on somebody right now. I can't justify it. It's not appropriate. I can tell them, here's what we're doing, and we strongly believe it's going to work. If you want to go on that ride with us, by all means.
So again, the biggest thing that I see, because you're right, like at the mission level, doing what you guys are going to do will work. That's not the part that I think anyone who's even considering, you know, wanting to do this is probably concerned about. They're concerned with all the hard work you're going to put in with, okay, Sean, cool, but what exactly do I need to make the facility look like? You know, mm-hmm. What does that look like? How am I going to, again, I know you're not looking to market to anybody, but like, I still need to understand how the fuck I go and I open the doors and people get into the website, they call, they walk in the door. That all has got to be there regardless.
Right. And so right now, all we have for someone who doesn't already have a gym, all we have is speculation. And that's why we can't reasonably ask somebody else to do this from scratch until we've done it from scratch. It's not fair.
Yeah, no, you can ask. You could say yes to someone who doesn't need you, isn't asking, is telling you, I want to take the risk. Like, fucking, I'm going to go put the money on the ponies this weekend, or I'm going to invest it in the fucking stock market, or I'm going to try this.
And during COVID, I had someone come to me and offer to open 20 in retail spaces in the New York City area. And I turned it down because the last thing I would want is 20 out there with our name on them, by the way, and then be like, oh, that's the wrong version. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want any money from me. They were going to invest in 20, give me ownership in those 20 locations, significant ownership, in exchange for helping them get them up and running. We're talking about close to a $5 million investment to get those things open.
That's, I mean, for 20 stores, 5 million, that's it. That's pretty good still.
They own the spaces.
That's okay. The last thing I want to ask about is, because obviously we're on this end of the spectrum, opening up the brick and mortar. And I had the pleasure to finally meet in real life Justin McClintock down in Philly when I was there 2 weekends ago. And mm-hmm. Justin, as far as, you know, from my understanding, he's one of the few guys you have in your ranks that is all remote. Like, he's not, he does it online. He has some people obviously he sees in real life at Subversives. But do you have a lot of coaches that are doing this thing online?
Yeah.
Is that an area? Because again, we're talking the highest barrier to entry is opening this brick and mortar thing. Highest mm-hmm. barrier to entry. Lowest barrier to entry is doing the online thing. Do you guys have any interest in developing both models at the same time?
We're doing it. Yeah.
Okay.
So we are ALP, the Active Life Professional Mentorship, is the product for the individual, the coach right now, who wants to build a career helping people reclaim their physical freedom, bridging that gap between fitness and healthcare. And they can do that online. They can do that in person. That's what Justin McClintock went through. It's 13 months long. Today it's $10,000 for the individual to go through it, or $875 a month for 13 months, or you can finance it with a third party company.
Does it differentiate between those two paths? Because those are two unique different paths.
Oh, very different. Every single professional in an active life space will have gone through that education.
Got it. And so it lays out the blueprint for going the online route or finding a gym that allows you to do your thing, if not your own.
The difference is, if you're a gym owner and you're buying ProPath from us, which is where you learn how to run these facilities, the staff who you have who are putting through that education on your behalf is not getting how to build the online business and leave the gym that you're in. Sure. That module is not in it, right? Because they're
obviously,
it's not fair. If you're coming to us from off the street, yes, that all of it is there. Build an online business that scales $10,000 to $20,000 a month and earns you the income you want.
Why do you think more people haven't gone that route? Because that's Justin. Like, how many other people are doing it like you're doing it? He said not many.
Well, yeah. So a few reasons why. First and foremost, we did a really bad job of communicating what it was for a long time. And we used to say to people, buy the seminar and then buy the immersion course. And then if you want, buy ALP. And the way that Nick Stram, who runs our sales for our company, described it was perfect. He's like, it kind of feels like we were telling them, get a six pack. And then they got it. And we're like, get a better six pack. And then they got it. And we're like, get a really sick six pack. And they're like, I already have a good six pack, man. Like, I don't want that thing. And we gave people enough to think that they knew everything they needed to know in the immersion course. And people went from making a few hundred bucks a month to $5,000-$6,000 a month in the immersion course. The average person doubled their income inside of 6 months when we did a survey. And what we realized was that it didn't even come close to fulfilling the promise of bridging the gap between fitness and healthcare that we stated, including being a part of the healthcare community, navigating the healthcare industry, working with doctors. We make that happen in the ALP. It wasn't until about January or February of this year that we really codified it in a clear way. And that's when we parted ways with the marketing department. So, you know, we're still in need of someone who can help us put our voice together and make it clear for the market to understand it. Right now it's all, you know, one-to-one sales.
And last question, and it goes to the hardest part of this mission and I've told you this publicly. I think that this is the thing that the part of your ambition I love the most, bridging the gap between fitness and healthcare. Well, you've already got the attention to fitness. The conquering that part's easy. How do you get the buy-in from someone who looks at you guys like, fuck you. I'm a doctor. I went to school for 8 goddamn years and you're going to put someone through 13 months and I'm going to have the respect. Like, how do you acquire the respect from doctors at scale?
Great question. Dr. Brower, would you like somewhere to refer your patients after you're finished taking care of them?
I guess. I don't know. I mean,
The answer is yes.
Is the answer yes? Or is the answer, I don't care?
The answer is yes. And the answer is yes, but. It's yes, but I don't trust anybody out there to do it. And for good reason. When we start talking to these hospital coordinators, to these doctors in the space, and we say, this is what we teach coaches. This is where their scope begins and this is where their scope ends. And this is when they need to make a referral. And this is how we want them to communicate with you. They're like, how many do you have? Where are they? The answer is yes, they want to do it. So this is something that the fitness industry, is like a petulant child about. Nobody respects me. You're not respectable from that person for that problem. You should be respected for what you're really good at doing. It's just not what you're making claim to do. So right now, the fitness industry is good at getting relatively healthy people fit. It's not good at helping unhealthy people become healthy people. They're two very different problems.
Yes.
It's not good at helping somebody who just got a shoulder surgery. Like, here's a simple way to put it. If you ask a trainer in the average gym, what would you do differently for somebody who had a shoulder surgery with no anchors and 4 weeks of rehab than you would do for somebody who had a shoulder surgery with 4 anchors and 14 weeks of rehab? What's different about your first day with that person? They're like, what's an anchor?
Yeah.
Right. The doctors who refer to us know that our students know that.
And I guess that in that is probably going to be, it's standing up a building, making it profitable, proving the concept, but like tackling that element at a national scale, because that's the majority of the active life, you know, mafia is United States based, right? The vast majority. Mm-hmm. Tackling that is probably going to, that's, you know, and we've talked about this. That might be something that exceeds your lifetime.
It probably will be, but I think that in my lifetime, I will know that we're doing it.
Yeah.
And the key is this: insurance companies know if a patient with the identical condition sees a physical therapist before they see an orthopedist, they are 74% less likely to have surgery for that condition. Think about that. Exact same condition, but you saw a physical therapist first and not an orthopedist. You're 74% less likely to get surgery. Guess what everybody who gets surgery needs after surgery? Physical therapy. So the insurance companies now know we can save a ton of money on surgeries if we let people go to physical therapists before they go to surgeons. Has the orthopedic surgery industry taken a major hit since physical therapists got direct access? No. So our thesis is that the exact same thing will be true if we let people see an active life professional before they see a physical therapist when appropriate. Because the active life professional, when responsible, is still going to tell somebody you need physical therapy for that. I can't help you with that.
Yeah.
And I believe less people who are going to physical therapy now are going to go waste physical therapists' time. And physical therapy is going to become elevated as even more valuable because they're absolutely necessary for the audience they're necessary for. And we're going to elevate somebody between the physical therapist and the fitness professional.
Sean, buddy, for people who, because I know you're hiring, right? Mm-hmm. I know you're hiring there. Anyone who wants to jam with you on this and what you got going on, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
I can send you the link. They wouldn't be talking to me. They'd be talking to Cody. He's the man in charge. But he's got a link for you, and I'll make sure it's in the show notes if you want to put it there.
100%. Brother, it is always good. I appreciate you coming on and jamming with me. I'm excited for you. I like guys that like to go through the door first and take some bullets. So proud of you.
Thank you. One of my favorite movie quotes is the first guy through the wall always gets a little bit bloody.
Yeah.
And for me in active life, that was Kelly. You know, Kelly Starrett went through the wall for mobility WOD and all that kind of stuff. Got bloody, took the arrows and paved the way for people like me. It's our turn.
It's your
now
turn.
To do it.
Yeah. Yep. Dope. All right, brother. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for popping on today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Stu.